This is Solo Travel Talk, the hassle-free travel series. Your solo travel advisor and host is Astrid Clements.
Oh, sweet irony. You leave your home to appreciate distant lands and glorious sights, and then the nerve of other people. Everywhere you go are crowds, lines, more crowds, and more people. The hassle of crowds and lines is enough to keep some people from visiting the places they want to see or doing the things they want to do. Your solo travel advisor, Astrid Clements, doesn't like crowds either. She has some tips and suggestions here in this episode of Solo Travel Talk, the hassle-free travel series. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. Before I get caught up in the throngs of people, let's hear from Astrid about dealing with crowds in a hassle-free way. Oh, Astrid, we should start off our show by saying this episode is brought to you by the Astrid Travel Club, and you have some exciting announcements about the Astrid Travel Club coming up.
Oh, yes. This is a project that actually came to fruition last year, and we had our first very successful trip to Marrakesh. And 2020, I think, is going to be absolutely fabulous. We have 7 trips planned. And some of them will be to cities that people have gone to before, but they'll have a different twist. All of the Astrid Travel Club trips have some kind of focus. I mean, I create these trips and these itineraries for small groups. They're for solo travelers who don't really want to go totally solo, but there's no added cost in terms of a single supplement. They're focused on, I guess you would say, some type of cultural literacy or enrichment. So you'll have fun. The itineraries, I always say my itineraries have flair, fun, and free time. So I think that anyone who's looking to join a small group, 4 to 6 people, on one of my trips, I think this is a real good chance to do it. And I have to say that these trips are not like, real moderately priced. They're more affordable luxury. We stay in really nice hotels, not your Ritzes or whatever, but they're very unique, authentic hotels that give you a very wonderful experience of the city or the place or the culture where you're visiting. But 2 upcoming trips that I'm really excited about is one is to Paris. And this trip will be focused on fashion. And we will be doing things like, we'll have dinner one night with a young Parisian fashion designer. We're going to tour several fashion museums. One is the Yves Saint Laurent. We'll go to the Louvre. They have a whole special museum section called it's in French, it's just the textile and fashion museum, basically. Mm. But it's kind of the history of fashion. Like I said, there's going to be food, fashion, and fine art. I really think it's going to be a great trip. That will be in April. Then in May, we're going to London. Now, I know lots of people have been to London numerous times. Well, this trip is going to focus on horticulture and gardening and how that influences the English culture, or how you understand the English culture through their love of gardening. And I think it's going to be delightful. I really think anybody who loves gardens and gardening, consider this trip. This is really, I've put so much thought into it, preparation and the construction of it. I think it's going to be great. So those are 2 of the trips. I'll talk about other trips and other podcasts because we're going to have 7 in 2020. Wow. Thank you, Astrid Travel Club, for sponsoring Solo Travel Talk.
That's right. That's right. Well, that's great. Well, today we are talking about crowds, and let's get organized about this topic a little bit, Astrid. So you and I are going to break things down in a couple of categories, and then we'll also have some time for some general crowds and lines tips, because I know you have those for us. Wait a minute. You're supposed to be our savior for the hassle.
I know, but this podcast is, I think you're going to be enlightened to certain things and certain things that you've noticed if you've traveled a lot, especially recently, and how we're going to cope with this, because this is not going away.
That is a good reminder. Okay, so let's start with talking about being strategic about when to travel. How does when we travel impact the crowds, and how can we capitalize on travel timing?
Okay, I would just kind of, you know, introduce this whole podcast by saying over-tourism really is a growing problem that travelers are experiencing all over the world. And avoiding crowds for, you know, a meaningful travel experience is really becoming harder and harder. So when and where you travel are very important factors. Otherwise, the quality of your vacation will be compromised with throngs of people. So the first idea and concept I want you to get in your mind when you're deciding wherever you want to go is when you want to go and where you want to go. And if this is smart to go there when you want to take a trip. So let's basically get into when to travel. There are three travel seasons, not four like the natural seasons, but there are three travel seasons. Most people who travel a lot are familiar with them, but I'll just go over them briefly. First of all, you have the peak or the high season. And this is basically from June to August. And it's really when the kids are out of school. That's when most people are traveling and when most of the kids are traveling too, or the college students, etc. Also holidays. This is where everybody's off, whether it's students or kids or people who work. So that's, you know, always a peak season. This is when the crowds are totally the worst. The lines are ridiculous in the major cities, whether you want to go to museums, sites, even in the subways. Harder to get restaurant reservations. Traffic is an issue. I mean, just all I can see is, you know, when I talk about this is, if you don't have your ticket already, you've got to stand in a line that is going around the block to get a ticket. And then you got to get back in the line to wait till you are allowed to get into the museum or the sites. And because overcrowding is so bad, they can only allow a certain amount of people for safety and a lot of different things that are going on now. So, I mean, it really, you can waste 3/4 of your day going to one place that you thought was only going to take 2.5 hours. It is really horrible. So, you know, during the high season, the lines, it really are just very, they're a serious problem, and they will end up affecting the quality of your vacation. Also, during this time, everything's more expensive. The flights are more expensive. The food in the restaurants are more expensive. The hotels are more expensive. It's basic economics, supply and demand. You know, when there's more demand, then, you know, the price goes up. Okay, second season is the shoulder season, and it's actually my favorite season to travel. This season is between April and May, or September and October. Basically, your spring and your fall. This time, the crowds are still there, but they're thinning. They're not, like, awful. They're not like Disneyland or Disney World crowds. And the prices do begin to fall. I mean, in the major cities with all the hotels, and then they're competing against Airbnbs, you can get some pretty good prices on hotel rooms during this time. The weather is still pleasant. And like if you're going to areas of the world where the sun goes down real quick, you still get enough daylight time during these times to enjoy that destination. Okay, then the third season is the off season or the low season. And this is between November and March, but not during the holidays. And it's really the winter, wherever winter is, you know, whether it's in the north or the southern hemisphere. But this is usually when the weather is the worst. It's very off-putting. Now, I say that, you know, during November and March, but you have to also realize in the Caribbean and in the Gulf, where there's lots of hurricanes, You know, that comes in the late summer to late fall season. So that's like an off season too. I mean, you have to really, you know that you can end up being in a hurricane. And there's also the monsoon seasons in the Far East. So you have to be very close to the, sensitive to that, because that is an off season. And I said the days are shorter, and that can be a real problem. I mean, I'll never forget. I went to St. Petersburg, Russia for Christmas one year with my daughter, Christmas and New Year's. We had a great time. Talk about cheap. Whew. I mean, the prices were so... We stayed in a palace hotel, and when I tell you this was gorgeous, this hotel, we paid $120 a night for a room that had our own sitting area, a separate bedroom, and a humongous bathroom with heated floors. I mean, the whole thing was just out of this world. But the days were very short. I mean, the sun went down at like 2:45, it seemed like. So we, you know, it affected the type of trip we had there. It was still beautiful, and we did everything we wanted to do. Or that we knew that we could do, that we'd planned. But, the daylight hours were very short. Also, you have to know, during these times, lots of the attractions are closed. Yeah. Or they have limited hours. So, you know, if you think you can do this, you got to make sure that they're opened at this time. Generally, like I just said, the whole environment is a lot less energized. Because it's winter, and it just affects people. But fewer crowds, or basically no crowds. Everything is at its least expensive. And the locals really are typically much more congenial. I mean, you know, the tourists aren't there, so they're more willing to be helpful. You probably can bargain more. It just things are more normal, even though it's winter. You get more normalcy, I guess, during that time. And I have to say that I have traveled in the low season, and enjoyed it. You know, but I was prepared for what the problems were going to be. And if you go like late February, early March, it's still kind of the low seasons. Boy, you know, the prices are still good, the daylight is more, and that kind of thing. Those are the three seasons. And, you know, you have to know, if you're going to go in October, what season that is, where you want to go, and is this the right place to go? Because you might think, oh, well, you know, I won't be able to do this, that, and the other. I need to rethink where I want to go. So seasons are very important. And really the deciding factor that determines what the season is in a particular place, because like I said, you have to think northern hemisphere and southern hemisphere, and it's basically opposite, are the weather, the working and the school holidays. And then also something I didn't mention is, you know, in a lot of places all over the world, they have a lot of festivals and religious holidays. And those can be any time during the year. So you have to know, or at least find out, whether you're going to be going somewhere during one of those festivals. Because if you hit that, it's a high season. The prices will be more, the crowds will be terrible, etc. So if that's what you want to do, then, you know, you plan accordingly. But if that's not really what you want to be in the middle of, don't go then. Another little tip when it comes to timing, if like you have to go in the peak season, in any time, any season you go, is during the week, Tuesday through Thursday, there's typically less crowds. So just know, if you can have most of your trip during the week, the crowds won't be as bad as on the weekend. Okay. So really, to determine, this is what I would say, exactly the travel season of a particular destination, your best bet is just to get on the internet and Google. say what's, you know, what's the peak travel season or what's the shoulder season for, you know, Rome or whatever. Okay. But as a bonus for my listeners today, I am going to give you a list of shoulder seasons for great U.S. destinations and international destinations that will help you kind of jar your thinking about this. You know, like I said, you need to Google if you're thinking about where you're going. But this list that I'm going to give you, it will kind of get you thinking correctly in terms of how to avoid crowds, et cetera.
You know, I like a bonus. Thank you, Astrid.
Oh, yeah, this is a big bonus. So, you know, get your pencil and paper out. Okay, for the United States, Savannah and Charleston, early spring, great time to go there. The crowds hadn't hit there, and those are both two very wonderful cities. If you want to delve into real Southern culture and architecture and food, hospitality, I mean, those are two beautiful cities and very, very historic. Santa Fe, late winter and early spring. Santa Fe is a great destination. The Southwest has so much to explore there, from the spiritual roots of the Hopi and the Navajo Indians to the art scene that they have now and the food culture. Santa Fe, I think, is cool. Late winter, early spring, best time to go there. New Orleans, my New Orleans, winter. Any other time, it starts to get hot. Spring is fine. Fall is still very hot. Summer, unless you are from the deep south, I mean, oh my God. But winter really is the best time to go after the holidays. Santa Barbara. This is a beautiful place to travel to, but you have to worry about the fog rolling in, etc. Best time, March through May. Hawaii, in the fall. Cape Cod, September to October. Palm Springs, that's another place a lot of people don't think about, but Palm Springs is it's got a vibe there. My husband and I spent one Christmas there. We loved it. I'll never forget. They have some kind of humongous, and when I tell you, humongous outlet mall. If you like, you know, Valentino, Chanel, and all of those, the really good ones, they have some mall that all of the people from Los Angeles come to near Palm Springs. But the best time to go there is October through December, not the Christmas season. Jackson Hole, April through May. I've never been there. That's on my bucket list. Memphis, April to May. Grand Canyon, September. And then that's important because you don't want to go to the Grand Canyon where there's so many people or it's really hot or the weather, it makes it, you know, just, you can't enjoy. I mean, you're going to enjoy what you see, but you can't enjoy it as much.
Well, and also the flora during the fall at the Grand Canyon is like beautiful.
Yes. And then kind of close is Yellowstone from September to November. Then you have the Hamptons. Oh, the Hamptons, one of my favorite places. And a lot of times, you know, a lot of people never think about going to the Hamptons. But, oh, that's a cool place for, you know, a five-day vacation. Fall or winter, best time. Key West, February and April. February through April, excuse me. Las Vegas, January through February. And do not go during the summer because it's an inferno. I had to do it one time, and I could not believe it. I mean, you can literally fry bacon and eggs on the seabed. And then San Francisco in the autumn. You know, San Francisco's weather is kind of weird, too. So autumn is a great time for them. Okay, your international destinations. First one of my favorite places in the world is Marrakesh. Best time to go there, which that my travel club just went there in the end of November and the beginning of December. Perfect time to go. Best time, though, is from November to February. I love Marrakesh. London, mid-September to November. Buenos Aires, mid-September to November. So those two are fall destinations. Another fall is Istanbul, September to November. Lima, October. Amalfi Coast, this is another time. I mean, Amalfi Coast, poor thing, has just gotten so overcrowded because everybody wants to experience the romantic. The Amalfi Coast is great, but with all those crowds and those narrow roads and all those little towns are all just full of tourists, it's awful. But the best time is mid-September to October. Queenstown, New Zealand, October to November. Iceland, September to October, and winter. Now, you know, you think, oh, winter, my God. You know, but Iceland is odd. You think it's going to be like, you know, complete frozen tundra, but the jet stream flows right by Iceland. So Iceland is not quite as cold. I just went there, and one of my guides said, you know, Iceland should have been named Greenland, and Greenland should have been named Iceland, because Iceland stays pretty green. Now, in certain areas, you've got the glaciers and the mountains and the fjords and that. And that's pretty much typically all the time. But this is when the crowds aren't there. So that's a good time to go. And Iceland is another one that's just really suffering from over-tourism because Iceland Air has done a fantastic job with the stopover program. People flying to Europe are stopping over in Iceland. The fares on Iceland Air are very affordable. People love Iceland. I mean, it is becoming one of those destinations everybody wants to do. And so, and I did experience a little bit of the issues with the travel companies and et cetera with, you know, it's trying to find, a level of that it's got it under control, and it's not quite there yet. So Iceland, September to October, and then actually winter. Botswana, if you want to do big game safari, October to February. The safari dates are, I've never done one, but I've done a lot of research and almost done it a couple of times and trying to figure out when I really want to go, when I'll see all the migration or whatever. And it's hard. And especially now since weather patterns are changing, you know, it's not as exact as I think it used to be. Okay, then we've got the Dalmatian coast with Dubrovnik, September through October. Canada, Montreal, late September to November. Do not go to Montreal or Quebec in the winter, because I can tell you, I'll never forget, I was 15 years old when I went to Quebec the first time, and I thought that I was going to absolutely turn to stone. It was so cold walking across the street. It was just terrible. The wind blows, and I don't know why it feels so cold there, but it really gets cold there. So don't go after November. Costa Rica, November. Tokyo, in the fall, September to November. Beautiful time of year in terms of changing the leaves, changing their colors. Amsterdam, October to November. Copenhagen, February to March. Cape Town, April to June. Lisbon, March. Paris. I just when I say it, I just want to be there. October to November. Rome, January after January 1st to March. Mexico City, November to December before the holidays. Sydney, winter. Beijing, February to January. It is cold then there, though, I can tell you. I was in Beijing, and it's a lot colder than you think. It's pretty far north, so be prepared. It's cold, but in terms of crowds and pollution and a lot of the environmental things, that's the best time to go.
And go before the spring festival there.
Oh, God, yes. You definitely don't want to get in the middle of that. And then Florence, September to November. So, you know, that's that's a pretty comprehensive list, but that just kind of shows you that, you know, you really should think about when, whenever you're deciding where you want to travel, okay? One other last suggestion about when to go. There's a wonderful website called Responsible Travel that I'm actually going to highlight at the end of this podcast, because it has so much wonderful information on how to have a quality travel experience and how to deal with over-tourism as a responsible tourist. So what I suggest is, you know, when you're thinking about, you know, where you want to go at a certain period of time, go to this website, because they have a wonderful guide that they have it like month to month, when to go where. So it's perfect. They'll show you the best places to go in January, February, you know, and they also have things it broken down to best time, good time, hottest time, wettest time, best time for wildlife. So it's really, it's not only like as far as crowds, it also gives you other factors that, you know, you might be particularly interested in. And they also break it down in regions, whether it's Europe, Americas, Africa, Asia, Australia, and the polar regions. So it's a great website.
Cool.
Yeah, real cool. So bottom line, if you want to avoid the crowds and the travel hassle that they bring, visit your desired destination during the shoulder or the off season.
I do feel some sympathy, because I know, depending on where you are in your just your life situation, the problem is that so many of us have the time off when it's the peak season. I mean,
it's horrible. Yeah. It's horrible. And I'm going to go into how to handle that when you have to travel during this season. You know, seriously. And you have to weigh whether you really want to spend the money to go to this place during the peak season and know that your experience is not going to be what you would really dream or want it to be. You know, all I can think about is Venice. Oh, my God, yeah. Venice has just been destroyed with all those cruise ships and everything. Oh, my God. You know, I mean, I had a lawyer friend who's on a board with me. He took his whole family to Venice, and you know, they wanted to go. Venice was one of those like cities that, you know, he dreamed about, and he came back and he said, "Ugh, it was awful." I mean, so many people, they couldn't even walk down the streets and the alleyways or get restaurant reservations. And the food was bad. And he was just like blown away. And he was asking me, gosh, Astrid, help me next time. Because he got to see a little bit, but the quality of it was very poor.
Yeah. This is actually this episode has reminded me of an upcoming episode about the feeling let down about your travels, that hassle. So there's a little bit of an overlap here, because you want to enjoy things, but then the crowds and the over tourism can really just take sort of the joy out of it.
Absolutely. And it's changing the destinations, because first of all, the people are more bunkered down. They don't like tourists, you know, and then it's got a lot of foreign vendors in there, and the
costs can be high of attracting that many tourists.
Yeah, and then the authenticity of the places is just compromised.
Yeah. It's an interesting trade-off. Okay. Well, so Venice is a great example, because some places are just, they are popular and they're going to be crowded, and that's just sort of a given. So what are some of your thoughts about juggling where we want to go and also wanting to manage being crowded? How do we play with this trade-off, Astrid?
Well, unfortunately, where you want to go is probably where everybody else wants to go.
Hence the term popular.
Whether they're bucket list destinations or wonders of the world, you know, there's lots of UNESCO World Heritage sites that are just fabulous, popular beaches, resorts, food, art, shopping destinations. I mean, the great places everybody wants to go.
The secret's out.
Yeah. So, you know, as I discussed, when you want to go in that answer, you know, if you want to visit this popular place, you have to, first of all, do it, if you can, during the shoulder or the off season. Otherwise, you've got to think strategically about where you want to go to experience your particular trip goals. I mean, you know, you might want to have a food experience, and instead of going to Paris, you can go to Bordeaux or Lyon or Biarritz or even in northern Spain, San Sebastian. It's fabulous food culture. So, you know, you have to kind of be willing to think, and I'll go into think outside the box in a minute, but here are some of the suggestions on how to pick really quality destinations that are less crowded, that you won't really experience that much over tourism, because the cruise ships, number one, don't go there. That's number one. You don't want to go when the cruise ships are docking.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Okay, so like I said, you got to kind of think outside of the box. If you want to go to Europe, you know, choose cities that are on the western and eastern perimeter of Europe. You know, instead of Paris, Rome, Amsterdam, Madrid, choose places like Puglia, which is in the southern Italy on the eastern coast. Beautiful area, fabulous Italian food, very unusual architecture there, very Italian when it comes to just base Italian values and being immersed into Italian. You know, I mean, it's so different than, you know, any of the cities, but it's a wonderful place to go, and you're on the coast, etc. So it's beautiful. Food's fabulous. Also, Sicily is a very great place to go. I mean, I did a whole, I think it was a 10-day tour of Sicily. Fabulous. I loved Sicily, and I hope to go back, and there's actually a direct flight now to Palermo from somewhere in the United States. It just crossed my news feed. I can't remember where it originates, but that tells you that more people are beginning to want to experience Sicily, and Sicily's fabulous. Western France. Here again, I mentioned Biarritz, but Biarritz, Bordeaux, the Basque Country, all that. That is a fabulous. I mean, the wines are great. Mm. The food is one of Biarritz is a great beach. And you've got the sophistication there of France, but there it's in a relaxed way. So it's got a lot of everything good that you experience in France. Also Portugal, go to Porto and not Lisbon. Lisbon is still though okay. And especially if you go in the right times. When I went, I was in Lisbon in early February. Oh, it was a great time to go. I mean, the weather wasn't bad. There weren't any crowds. I loved it. I really did. Lisbon is a great city. Eastern Europe, another good place to explore, because you've got, you know, the essence of Europe there with a Slavic kind of twist and a Asian influence in there. So, you know, the food is interesting and the architecture is good, etc. They're still kind of coming out of the communist era. But there's been enough time there that it's kind of reconstituted itself or refurbished or whatever it's kind of gotten back to its roots, I guess. But you've got Krakow and Warsaw, Budapest. Oh, I love Budapest. I could go to Budapest every year. The food is so good there. The wines are so good there. And there's just something about the vibe there. They have, you know, the music, the Hungarians, they just have some kind of fire in their belly, and it comes through in everything. I really loved Budapest, and very affordable. Also, Bratislava, Slovakia. I haven't been there, but there are a lot of people who are beginning to take note of Bratislava. So, you know, you kind of think secondary cities. Antwerp, Lyon, Naples, Quebec, Hanoi, Marrakesh. Two others that really aren't secondary, but because people don't think of them and they're bigger, are Singapore and Moscow. But they don't, I've never experienced crowds there. Singapore is so well run. I mean, you know, they have no traffic jams. They regulate their traffic. I mean, everything is just, city-state runs like a fine-tuned clock. I mean, people don't jaywalk. There's no crime. It's spotless. I mean, it's utopia. So there's no crowds or over tourism. I mean, they would regulate it out in some kind of way. And then Moscow, people don't really think about traveling to Moscow unless they're doing business or they really want something exotic. But I loved Moscow. Oh man! And it's getting more and more friendly to foreign travelers, etc. It's beautiful. Oh, it's got a lot of soul there, and it's very interesting. So you know, think secondary cities in terms of the United States. I've mentioned some of them. Key West was one. Portland, Santa Fe. Williamsburg, lots of people don't think about Williamsburg, beautiful place to go to. Austin, Nashville, Nashville's getting a little overcrowded, but Nashville, and then I mentioned Savannah. Those are, you know, like outside of the box. Now, then you go even further off the beaten path. Now, these are destinations that, you know, people don't think about it that much unless you've kind of done a lot of the stuff and you're really wanting to, you know, see the rest of the world. Well, you know, you got the Silk Road. You basically have China. Lots of people have not been to China. I did a 6-week trip all through China. It was so interesting. I mean, I think I went to 7 different places and I did a Yangtze River cruise. But that's really still kind of off the beaten path. But it's very interesting. And I really do encourage people to do China. I mean, they're a force in the international economy and in how all the world is changing with diversity and economics, etc. You should get to know more about China. It's a very interesting place. Japan is actually off the beaten path. Not that many people have traveled to Japan. It's usually for business. Oh, that is one of my favorite places in the world. Oh, that culture is fabulous. These people have got their you-know-what together. I'm telling you. And the food is great. It's spotlessly clean. Everything runs on time. I mean, you know, it's not perfect because you've got the language barrier. And, that's the biggest thing, the language barrier. And it's kind of expensive. But everything else, Japan, those people are they really have a sense of contentment. And understanding of how to make their life quality, no matter what, in a very day-to-day basic way. I love Japan. Places like Mongolia, you know? Yeah, you know, places that, you know, you wouldn't have normally thought about, but now have opened up. And, like, the best place to start, if you want to look at quality off the beaten path experiences, I just go to National Geographic expeditions, really. I'm not a big one on joining tours, but if you can find small tours, and especially with National Geographic, they're very high quality.
So are you saying, like, sort of shop the comp here and just see where they're going and then consider those places?
Yes. Hmm. Either do the tour with them or do it yourself, depending on your comfort.
Interesting.
And how much time you have. You know, if you're like me who love to go totally solo, I don't do it for everything because there's certain things that you just can't do. I couldn't do the Yangtze going all down there by myself. I couldn't do a lot of the significant sites in Egypt without going on a Nile River cruise, especially as a solo female traveler. You know, I'm not a fraidy cat, and safety is the biggest thing that I'm always thinking about. But then there are certain things that just make more sense if you are with groups, you know. So in terms of logistics, cost, safety, hassle, the whole thing. So, you know, off the beaten path, think about doing those types of vacations, as well as adventure. These adventure tours with the kayaking and the hiking and the canoeing and all the bird watching and all kinds of stuff, they are taking you to places now that were not normal tourist destinations, and they're not overcrowded. So, you know, think outside the box, and especially, too, if you have a particular hobby that you like. You know, trying to find those places where people are really good at that hobby or that kind of. So, okay. But if you don't want to go to these secondary travel destinations, you know, to avoid the crowd hassle, here are some tips that can help you basically when you're in the over-tourism hotspots. And, you know, there are not a lot of them because, you know, you just can't.
There's only so much. Even Astrid yes. can do.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yes. Okay. So here are the tips to lessen the crowd hassle factor. Laugh out loud. But it does help. Okay. First of all, you know, every trip usually starts with flying. And that's your first where you hit it in those security lines.
And we have a whole episode on the flying hassle-free.
Yeah. Tune into that one. But, you know, that's another thing that starts to get that stress meter going up. The next tip is book your tickets in advance. If you want to, you know, go to an opera or a theater performance or museum, try to do it online before you go. But if you're not comfortable with that, as soon as you get to your hotel, get with the concierge and get them to do it. Don't try to do it yourself or go there, the ticket office yourself. Or, you know, think I'll just go, you know, and get my... No, that's when you get, especially these great museums, these lines that go like around the block just to get the ticket. And then you have to stand in another line to get in. Oh, God. And this happens like in Venice, in Paris, in London. It's so horrible. I mean, people are just shocked. They're totally shocked. But, okay, try to buy, you know, your ticket in advance and buy the bypass the line ticket, okay? And some of them actually designate a specific time, which, you know, if you're trying to time an itinerary or stay or do, that's a very good thing. The next thing is if in the city you're going to, they have what's called a museum pass or a city sites pass. And, you know, you want to go to most of those sites. That's, first of all, it's a good deal in terms of cost. In most of them, you don't have to stand in the line with the pass. Not all of them. Some of them you have to get a designated time. But if you can buy those passes, buy those. Because it really does save you time and entrance fee. But if you're not sure whether it's worth it, because that's what I'm always with me. Is this really going to be worth it? Talk to the concierge about it and then tell them what you're interested in, what you've got on your itinerary. And they'll say, yeah, you ought to buy it. No, you shouldn't. And I will get you the tickets to the few things that you want to do. Okay? The next tip is when to go. When to visit the popular sites, okay? Be the first one there or just before they're closing. Mm. That's when, you know, it's not the worst. And also during mealtime. Those are the two times to hit those real popular sites. Then the next tip is visit lesser known sites at peak times. So in the mid-morning and after lunch, when everybody's wanting to, you know, go to the Louvre or whatever, you shop or visit the park or gardens, minor museums, art galleries, grand homes. Do those other kinds of things that you want to do during those peak times. Okay, I mentioned this earlier. Day of the week is important, as well as some evenings. Tuesdays and Wednesdays are usually the least crowded times in any place where you're traveling. Could be Thursday too. And then Thursday evenings, there are a lot of museums all over the world that are open. And they have a lot of nice events too. I went one time, I was in London to the V&A, Victoria and Albert Museum, and they had a wonderful like string quartet and wine and hors d'oeuvres. You know, during the evening opening hours. It was wonderful. I enjoyed that. And then I went through the museum and it was perfect. It was much better than going there during the day. So, okay. Then next is consult your concierge. I mean, this is where your concierge is really important. You show him the itinerary and you ask him to help you adjust how you execute it to avoid the crowds. I mean, that is, you know, key. If there's any tip that I give you that's important, that's an important one. Then number nine is basically sign up for specific tours that have skip the line tickets, that take you behind the scenes, and after hour activities. So instead of visiting the Louvre, take a tour of a certain thing at a certain time and skip the line and everything. And you can do it better than trying to do it yourself. Even though it might cost you a little bit more, it's a smart way to manage your time on a trip. Just have a chill out attitude. I mean, look, some lines and crowds are really just unavoidable. You have no choice but to practice patience and stay calm. And I know for Americans, it's so hard. They just get so, I mean, if you have to, just glue yourself to your iPhone and just deal with it, you know what I'm saying? Because you can't do anything about it. But I can say, Japan, the people in Japan are the greatest people who liner uppers I've ever seen. They're always in this constant state of zen. Nobody's pushing or mad. Everybody, you know, nobody's trying to get ahead of each other. They're just chilled. And that's really, you have to do that. You know, I mean, you don't have a choice. So just challenge yourself to chill.
I think we can recommend a podcast you could listen to while you're waiting in line somewhere.
Yeah, excellent idea. Solo Travel Talk.
Yeah, there we go. Just to close out the show, Astrid, are there any other tips that you might have for lessen the crowd factor?
Okay, Catherine. Well, I think I've answered this question already. I mean, you know, there's not a whole lot you can do. So instead, I'm going to introduce to our listeners a new consciousness and travel concept that seeks to lessen the phenomenon of over-tourism.
Oh, interesting twist.
Yes. This progressive idea of responsible tourism refers to tourism that creates better places for people to live and visit with an emphasis on to live. This is really kind of the opposite of over-tourism, which diminishes the quality of life for local residents. And you have the negative experience, you know, when you're a visitor there. Mm. And one solution to over-tourism is to become a responsible tourist. And a responsible tourist is someone who travels in ways that maximizes positive impacts where they're going and minimizes the negative impacts. So, I mean, I just think this is just a cool new perspective on travel. And, You know, it's amazing. When I do the research for these podcasts, to make sure that, you know, I'm not leaving something out, and I want to really give our listeners a substance when they listen to our show, I always learn something. It's wonderful. I mean, you know, I invariably come across some kind of new travel concept or latest and greatest. And that's exactly what happened with this podcast, is I found this incredible and thought-provoking website called Responsible Travel. And this is not a new website. It's been up for, I think, at least 15 years.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And here is really where I was introduced to this kind of thinking. I mean, I've heard, you know, lots of people are talking about the environment now, okay? And, you know, not using too much hot water and don't use plastic and, you know, don't throw things away and all this kind of stuff. That's all part of it. But it's much more than that. You know, to end the show, I'm going to share some of the little tidbits and tips that I read on this website. But I really do encourage you to go on the site. And I'm going to actually go back to the site and really study it, because I think it's really spot on where how to deal with over-tourism. Okay, the first thing is always think time and place when you're deciding where to go. And that's what I stressed in the very beginning. I mean, you know, just don't think, well, I want to go to Paris, you know, in June because
of the song.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, think about it. Think about it strategically and when you want to go. And is this really when you want to go? Okay. And I pretty much covered this suggestion earlier in the show. I kind of beat it to death, but I'll have to go into a little bit more just to hone it in. I mean, you just think about over tourism and some of the cities that people have been writing about that have been just really absolutely crushed by it. Barcelona is one, you know, and to a lesser extent, Madrid and Costa del Sol in Spain. I mean, the tourists, the residents are fed up with the tourists. They're mean to tourists. There's a tension everywhere, you know, and why? Unless you really you want to go and this is your one-time opportunity, there are many other Spanish cities and villages that aren't crowded, that really do give you an authentic insight into the culture and the daily life of Spain. And on this website, they have all kinds of suggestions. So if you want to visit Barcelona as a responsible tourist, you should really try to do it in the off season, so you put less strain on the infrastructure and the residents. So this is the mindset that you're getting from this website and what they're recommending. Also, another thing is a responsible tourist should always try to patronize local businesses and restaurants. Take tours with local guides versus international tour companies. So basically, think local. A responsible tourist should think local, patronizing the local places. And travel in smaller groups and smaller tours. Don't go on these huge tours. Stay in a local family-owned hotel. This kind of thing. So think local. Also, on this website, it espouses to fairness in traveling with respect to the locals. This is so important. A lot of people, and I hate to say this about Americans, but when they go, they're just American. You know, but they're not sensitive to how the locals are feeling when they're being bombarded with these foreigners there. So really do try to sensitize yourself. Before you go, read about the culture, do's and don'ts, tone it down, you know, and try to interact with them and leave something good behind. You know, Maybe a smile, a big smile, or a thank you, or a big tip, or just something that you think that you've done that's a little bit more than just a normal nicety. You know, those little things are all part of the consciousness. And they also, in this thought, is you know, profit and principles focus on where your travel dollars go back into the local community, not just the big tourist company. So, you know, think about where you're spending your money. And are you helping somebody, or, you know, helping this family restaurant stay in business? Because profit really isn't the most important thing. And that's some of what's going on with, you know, what's making certain destinations not as good as they used to be. So there's a, there should be some kind of balance, or seek to find the balance between profit and principle. And you'll see it in social, environmental issues are important. You know, that's some of the, protect, not using too much water, using your towel more than once. You know, and all these little things help to change what's going on with responsible, being a responsible tourist. On this website, you'll also find tips on how to be a responsible tourist. They tell you the do's and don'ts, best places to travel to. They also have a matchmaking service. So if you, you know, what kind of experience do you want? And they'll pair you up with the right guides. I mean, this website is just so cool. So, you know, this is just a brief introduction to the responsible travel phenomenon, but I really highly recommend our listeners to visit the website and learn more about this new travel consciousness. Because personally, I think this responsible travel will be foremost in most travelers' mind in the coming years. I think everybody's going to kind of, it's going to be hip to be a responsible traveler rather than just, you know, out there, you know, being able to pay for whatever you want to do. Okay, Catherine, well, that's really the show for today. I know you talked about our sponsor, the Astra Travel Club. I want to highlight that, yes, we, on all our tours, we do employ local and highly certified guides. And we strive to support local businesses and avoid major companies. That was one of my key things.
Yeah.
And most of our tours are during the solar season. shoulder season. So I didn't realize before this podcast, but our trips are incorporating some responsible travel principles, and I'm very excited about it. So do go to my website, astratravel.com, and look at what we have to offer on with our travel club. So it's time to say goodbye. But before we do, if you've enjoyed the show, give us a like and a share. And most importantly, subscribe to Solar Travel Talk. Because when you subscribe, it pushes out our show exponentially to a larger audience worldwide. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, everybody, for being here with Solo Travel Talk. We are grateful to the Astra Travel Club for being the sponsor of this program. Solo Travel Talk is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, your favorite podcast app. We thank you for listening. As you go forward traveling, make sure you're not part of the crowd. We thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time on Solo Travel Talk.
Find Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. All things Astrid, including the Astrid Travel Club and this podcast, are available at astridtravel.com. Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk.